Hello and welcome everyone to episode 51 of the Ducky O'Brien Show, and today we have a doozy of an episode. I'll be taking a deep dive into what's new in Onion OS version 4.3.0, which is the latest stable version as of this recording. Onion OS is primarily for the Miu Mini and the Miu Mini Plus, and I would like to note here that the Miu Mini does not have Wi-Fi while the Plus version does. So any feature that uses Wi-Fi will be unavailable for the original Miu Mini. I will be taking the audio portion on my YouTube video and turning it into a podcast episode. There will be some sections where the audio is insufficient to describe what's going on, so I'll have edited inserts where I describe what's going on. Hopefully that will be sufficient to cover what is new in the operating system. If you would like more resources, I will include links to the official release notes, as well as my YouTube video and my blog, so that every angle and every facet of this update can be covered. Before we begin, I would like to thank you for dropping by and listening. I really do appreciate it. Anyways, why don't we get into the episode? Alright fellas, I'm back, and this video will be formatted a little bit differently. Usually I script out everything very heavily and I edit the crap out of it. This one will still be edited, but it's going to be a little bit more casual and with no script. And that's because there's just too much to go over, and I'll have to write an encyclopedia. Anyways, we'll be going over the release notes for Onion v4.3. This is the official latest stable version, and there are a lot of changes. Some of it does carry over from the release candidate version, and I will say here that so far it's looking very stable. As always, I'm going to timestamp everything below as well as link all the sources, so you can skip around and check everything out for yourself. Alright, there's a lot to cover, fellas, so why don't we get right into it? We'll go through every single change. We got features, core Onion features, and apps. We'll start with the Miu Mini V4 560p support added by T-Gecko. Support for the Miu Mini V4 with its 560p screen has been added. The resolution is now added automatically, and 560p is the default resolution for RetroArch and Nintendo DS on Drastic on the Miu Mini V4. A system to allow ports to use the new resolution is also in place, but it has to be added to the ports manually. Alright, I added some words in there because I think there were some typos, but why don't we go take a look. I don't have a V4, I will get one eventually, but I am broke, so bear with me guys. Here is the original Miu Mini. These are the different versions here. V4 is the latest, and then this is the Miu Mini Plus, which I have here, so it's significantly smaller. And the problem with the V4 was that the screen was a different resolution. It was a very awkward resolution, and games looked a little bit rough. But thanks to the developers, they made it look really good. So this is a post from Beric Phillip from the SBC Gaming subreddit posted 2 months ago. And I'm showing this because I don't have a device for myself, but you guys can get an idea of what it's going to look like if you have one and you haven't updated. So if you take a look here, it's quite blurry, but with integer scaling on, it looks super good. So here, we got integer scaling off. You can see it looks a little bit blurry. Integer scaling on, and it looks fantastic. I think there's either like literally a bar of pixels missing or like a bar of black space, but it looks really good. So if you have a V4 and you weren't happy about the display, there's no reason to not get one now. There's no reason to not add to your handheld collection. And I see a lot of outdated information and recommendations floating around on the subreddits and online where people don't recommend getting the V4 because of the screen, but that problem has been fixed now. So rest assured, if you get a V4, it will look nice. All right, moving on to the next one. We have the screen recorder added by XK9274, a tool to record a screen. This tool will not offer perfect performance in games, but can be used to record, demonstrate apps and features. So why don't we take a look at the details? I'm going to actually show it on the Miu Mini in just a second. Here we see a screenshot of the screen recorder app setup, and we have the features down here. You can record your current screen, recording indicator icon, customizable countdown before starting recording, hotkey to stop and launch a record from anywhere. They do note here that it's not suitable to record game footage because it uses a lot of the CPU, so you're going to get a lot of lag and the frame rate won't be stable. Why don't we go over how to do this on the Miu Mini? So if you go into apps, you're going to find it in the Tweaks app. If you don't have this, you go to Package Manager, press R to go into apps, go all the way down to Tweaks, turn it on, and then press Start twice, and it will save the changes and install the app, and you can go back and access the Tweaks app now. In here, we're going to go scroll down to Tools, and we will see Screen Recorder, and here we can access the Screen Recorder. You can turn it on by hitting A right here if you want. You can have a countdown. You can have an indicator on or off, and you can toggle the hotkey, which is Menu and A, and you hold that for about 2 seconds. Now, I would recommend to turn this off, and I'm going to show you why in just a second. By the way, when we start, and so as you can see, there is an indicator right there. The video will be stored in Media, Videos, and Recorded on your SD card. Now I'm going to start a game just to show you the game performance. We're going to do something kind of lightweight, Game Boy Color. I'm going to start Link's Awakening DX. So I'm just going to record a little bit here. Now, if you notice, the indicator just show up here on the top right corner of the screen. It flashes. And it might take you out of the gaming experience. So if you're doing something and you don't want it to bother you, I would suggest turning it off. We're going to long hold Menu and A. It makes a little beep, and then now it's off. All right, now let's take a look at the footage. Once again, it's in Media, Videos, and Recorded. Let's take a look. Let's skip to the gameplay. So if you notice here, it doesn't record any sound, and it is a little bit laggy. You can tell from the video that it's not as smooth as actually playing the game. But in my opinion, I think this footage is completely usable to demo something or to show off something in the game. So I think they're kind of underselling it. It might perform poorly for, let's say, PlayStation 1, which is going to push the Miu a little bit more. But I think this is completely usable footage. It's not perfect, but I think it gets the idea of the game across. Now, if you take a look at the details, we can see that it is indeed the screen resolution of the Miu Mini, the 640 by 480. And the bitrate is 250 kilobits per second. It's kind of low, and it's 25 frames per second. Okay, our next one is very interesting. It's the VNC server added by XK9274. Remote display and remote control of your Miu Mini Plus from your computer thanks to VNC. So if you take a look here, basically we can remote into our Miu Mini. And... It, for some reason, my home network doesn't like the device, so I have to place the handheld very close to the router. And it is a little bit slow and laggy, but it's pretty neat. I do want to note here that the original Miu Mini does not have Wi-Fi. Wi-Fi is only on the Miu Mini Plus. So any features I talk about going forward, which talks about connecting to the network, is only for the Miu Mini Plus. So why don't we take a look at the handheld. To enable it, we have to make sure that the Wi-Fi is on. Make sure you turn it on, fellas, because sometimes it turns itself off. After that, we're going to go into the Tweaks app. We're going to go into Network. I'm going to scroll all the way down. We're going to make sure that VNC screen share is enabled. We're also going to need the IP address of the device. So we can see on the top here that mine is 192.168.0.101. Added our ducky here, you can find your IP address of your Miu Mini Plus by going into the Tweaks app. In the Tweaks app, go to the network section, and on the very top, it'll display your IP address if you are connected to a network. This is your home network IP address, so you can't connect to it from outside. Alright, to download the client, we can use RealVNC, so if I click on this link here, editor ducky here, the URL is https://www.realvnc.com/en/. The URL is https://www.realvnc.com. It'll take you to a page, and it'll be in French. Don't worry, go on the right, upper right hand corner, and you can translate to English if that's your main language. If not, you can choose one of the languages there. If those languages aren't your main language, you can use Google to translate the website. So you download the RealVNC Viewer, install it, and then here I'll show you what it looks like. And you don't have to log in. I just X'd out of the box. I don't like making accounts. And we're going to type in the IP address of our Miu Mini Plus, which was 192.168.0.1. As you can see here, we have this. Now, this might fail if I leave my handheld here, so I'm going to quickly bring it closer to the router. Okay, it timed out, so I had to redo it, and you're going to get this warning, unencrypted connection. It's fine, you can connect, and here we have our device. Now, if you want to know the hotkeys, they're a little bit different. So we got A is spacebar, B is left control, and the arrow keys are the arrow keys. The D-pad are the arrow keys, I mean. So if you take a look here, I can press left control. I'll go back. It's a little bit slow and laggy. I'm going to actually show you a game running on this, and it's not going to be ideal. Okay, now this will show you how laggy it is. I'm moving. I'm pressing spacebar. There you go. Editor ducky here. So basically what I'm doing right now is I'm connecting to my Miu Mini while using my desktop. So I'm remoting into the Miu Mini Plus. And on my monitor is a tiny square screen showing the display of the Miu Mini Plus. And I can control it remotely by using my keyboard. Now for the example of Link's Awakening DX, when I'm moving, the screen barely updates and is very laggy. So imagine playing Counter-Strike with like a ping of 900. And that's what you get. You're teleporting all over the place. Button inputs aren't registering or they're registering late. And it might not be because of the quality of the software. I think it's mostly due to my home router not liking my Miu Mini Plus for some reason. Whenever I try to connect my device to the network, it's always very spotty. So is this ideal? It depends on your home network speed, but I think it's just down to the Miu lacking the power as well in terms of the hardware. But the fact that you can even do this to begin with is pretty darn neat. Now, would I recommend everyone do this? Not really, but I'm sure someone out there will imagine a use case scenario where this fits. Next up, we have the blue light filter added by XK9274. And this will control the blue light filter, and you'll have a schedule. You can set the intensity and the state. Take a look here. The hotkeys for enabling it or disabling it is holding menu and B for 2 seconds. Now, I do have to note here, if you want to use the schedule option, you do have to set time automatically via internet to be on. And for that, you have to turn on your Wi-Fi, go to date and time, and then you can set this up under your tweaks for system. All right, why don't we go switch to the handheld? I'm going to show how to use the set time automatically via internet on. Make sure your Wi-Fi is on. And we're going to go to the Tweaks app, go to System, Date and Time, and set automatically via internet so we can turn it on. Now for the blue light, we're going to go into Appearance for Tweaks. And we're going to scroll down to Blue Light Filter here. We can turn it on. As you can see, it might be a little bit hard to tell from the video capture here, but it's a little bit more warm. We can turn the schedule on if you want. You can change the intensity. I kind of like the max setting, although it does look too warm. And here we can schedule it. So I think this is nice if you play your handheld during night and you don't want that harsh glare. I do want to note here as well, I don't know if this is, you know, a placebo effect, but I think after updating to 4.3, the darkest state of the screen is darker than it used to be. So lowest brightness setting does feel a little bit darker. It's pretty nice in that it won't hurt your eyes as much when you're playing during the evening. And I had many, many sleepless nights where I played Link's Awakening. I think this will be useful for the night owls out there. A very nice feature to have. I actually had someone ask me a question about this recently, but this is PWM frequency adjustment added by T-Gecko. Added an option in Tweaks app to control the backlight's PWM frequency. This can help reduce the buzzing sound coming from the speaker. So if you don't know, PWM stands for pulse width modulation, and this is used mainly for the LCD panel. And what it can do is it'll introduce this high-pitched whine in the speakers. So if you were to increase the volume, two masks with nothing on and then put it close to your ear, you should be able to hear a high-pitched whine. You're normally not going to encounter this because there'll be music and sound effects playing, but some people are sensitive to it. As well as if you use the volume boost, that high-pitched whine will be more apparent. All right, so I'll show you where to go. This will be in apps and tweaks once again. And then we're going to go into advanced. And here we see the PWM frequency. 800 is the default, but if you lower it, it will decrease the high-pitched whine, but there is a side effect that may affect some people. This affects the backlight. At lower frequency, you may be able to see the backlight flicker, and this usually causes nausea. So if you set this lower because you're annoyed at the sound effect, and then you start feeling sick, I would recommend increasing the PWM once again. Another interesting tidbit is you can sort of see the brightness being affected with the different pulse width modulation frequencies. So a little interesting tidbit there. Okay, I would like to issue a small apology here. It totally slipped my mind, but I forgot that the Miu Mini makes a sound when you turn it on and when you turn it off. It's like a little beep, a little blip. It sounds a little bit harsher than a beep, though. And for some reason, it didn't trigger in my mind as something worth mentioning because I grew up during the age of dial-up, and computers made a lot more sounds. Like if you know the post-beep noises where it indicates if it posted or not, if y'all are familiar. But, you know, dial-up sounded like you're trapping a shrieking banshee and teleporting it to the very depths of hell through your computer. And so when I heard it, I was like, whatever, you know. It was like, oh, that's kind of mild. But for some people, it bothers the crap out of them. So I should have, you know, mentioned that in my review. I apologize. I'll do better for my next reviews and try to make sure I don't miss anything. But yeah, I'm still new to this. So thank you very much for your patience. And I'm trying my best to improve every moment that I can. Editor Ducky here. One thing I forgot to apologize for as well is I made a video covering the Datafrog SF2000. And that device has a very big hardware design flaw where it'll keep draining the battery, and it uses an 18650 cell and it's unprotected, meaning you can drain it completely. And if you recharge it, it's a really big fire hazard, and those batteries will explode. If you don't believe me, just look up vape cells exploding on YouTube and you'll see how risky it is to have that behavior. One of the easier solutions was to buy a protected cell. But one thing that I just didn't know was that most protected cells end up being like 3 to 4 millimeters longer. So it might not be able to fit in the device as comfortably. And someone left a comment saying that they ran into the problem. So I think they watched my video or read my article, and there was at least one person who bought a battery and it didn't fit properly. And I feel really bad because those batteries are around $10. And that may be a lot of money for some people out there because they're living in different countries where they don't really have access to these electronics. It costs a huge markup, or they're just plain expensive compared to whatever daily wage they get. So I felt really bad about that. And I'm definitely trying my best to make sure that no one buys something and then regrets it. That's my main goal. My goal isn't to be a shill or anything. It's just to make sure that if you buy something, you can be confident that you're going to like it, and that you'll know exactly how it'll perform and how long it'll last. This one is very handy, and I use it a lot. It's the battery monitor added by SikroTef. Onion battery tool enables to track and monitor historical battery charge while also providing an estimate of the remaining game time. Alright, why don't we take a look at the handheld? It'll be under apps and battery monitor. This will have to be added through the package manager. And once we start the app, this is very handy. You can press left or right to scroll through. You can press R or R2 to zoom in and L and L2 to zoom out. So it's a very nice tool to get an estimate of like how long you have left to play. As you can see here, that's when it's going to run out. And you can also see how it performs. So over here is when I started playing Game Boy Color. And then here there's a sharp drop, and that is me using a Moonlight and using Wi-Fi heavily drained the battery. So you can see it's definitely a lot steeper here. And I was doing a lot of testing. It's a much steeper curve. Just for generally playing though, it's pretty nice. I get at least 4 hours and have enough battery left over to do more things. So 4 hour sessions are pretty good on this device. This is a very nice quality of life improvement added here. This is the M3U playlist generator added by Schmertzum. This tweak's app tool will generate automatically the M3U playlist files for multi-disc games. So if you don't know, if you have multi-disc games for, let's say, PlayStation 1 and you want to switch between the discs, it's very easy if you just create a single file which includes the location of the disc files, and you load the M3U file and it will handle the disc changes for you automatically. You can take it a step further and use .chd files, which save space because they're compressed. Why don't we go take a look at the handle for this feature? This will be under apps in the tweaks section once again. And we're going to go all the way down to tools. And here we have generate M3U files for PlayStation games. And here we'll see we have two options, multiple directories, which will create a directory for each game, or single directory, which will create just one called multi-disc and put all the games here. Now, I would highly recommend getting the Tiny Best Set ROM set online, and that is already sorted into a multi-disc folder and has the M3U files made for you. So you don't have to do any of this, but for games where you have to do it yourself, you can just pick one of these options and it'll take care of it for you. The other option is to create the M3U files yourself, and there are other emulators with multi-disc images that you will have to do this for. I have to say, Onion OS is getting super convenient to use. Thank you to all the hard work put in by the devs. This is another quality of life feature. This is the App List Sorting Tool added by XK9274. This new tool, included in the Tweaks app, will sort your Onion app list A to Z or Z to A. Alright, let's go take a look at the handheld. This will be in the Tweaks app once again. We're going to go all the way down to Tools. And here we're going to sort app list A to Z. Before I do that, let me show you my app list. So I sorted it one time, but if you add new apps after sorting, you can see Expert is all the way down at the bottom here. Now if you have a lot of apps, it might take a little bit of time. Alright, now if we go back and take a look, we can see that Expert is in the correct alphabetical location. Now this is pretty nice if you have OCD and you're like, I need everything organized alphabetically. This is for you. For me, what I prefer is to have my most frequently used apps on the top or on the bottom, so I can just hit up and go all the way down here. And then my least frequently used apps in the middle, so it takes longer to get to them. Our next one is also very handy. It is the automatic selection of emulators in the Package Manager added by Amy91. Package Manager allows to auto-select emulators that has ROMs present. This is very handy if you're doing a couple of things. If you're installing Onion OS onto an SD card but have the ROMs directory and structure intact from another MIUI Mini, or let's say you have to reinstall Onion OS on your MIUI Mini for some reason, just leave the ROMs directory structure as is, and then when you copy the Onion OS files over and initialize the installation, it can tell which emulators you need based on the ROMs folder. Alright, so why don't you go take a look at the handheld, and we're going to see this in action. Go to Apps, and I'm going to scroll all the way down to Package Manager. And here, if you look at the Verified Emulator section, we can see that I have installed the emulators that I need for my ROM sets. Now it will automatically recognize this. If you press X, it'll go to toggle all of them. And if you press X again, it'll go to none. And if you press X again, it'll go to automatic. Automatic is the default selection here. If we take a look at the cartridge symbol to the left of the on symbol here, we'll see that that signifies that the emulator is installed. Again, this is a very handy quality of life feature that removes extra steps you have to do on your own and does it automatically for you. Our next feature is the mute background music option added by the Unburn. With this, you can mute the background music for themes. I'll go back to the handle. For this, we're going to go back into the Tweaks app. We're going to scroll all the way down to Appearance, and we're going to go into Theme Overrides. And here we have the option to mute the background music. This next feature is disabling the automatic time restore, and this was added by tgecko. Normally, Onion saves the system time at shutdown and restores it on boot up. This new option disables the restore part. To use it, create the file sd/tempupdate/config/.notimerestore. To understand what this does, we have to look at how the handheld behaves. If we go take a look at the clock app here, so you can set the time, and when you turn it off and boot it, it'll restore this time and then continue on from whenever you shut it down. Unless you select the option to sync the time every time you connect to Wi-Fi, you will have to manually update the clock every time you want the time to be accurate. Some people don't want this automatic restore feature, so by creating that file, it will disable it. To create the file, navigate to the .tempupdate/config folder, right-click anywhere in there, and then select Create New Text File. Name it to .notimerestore with no extension, and you are good to go. For most people, the default behavior of Windows is to hide file extensions. Now, even if you rename it with no extension, it will have a .txt file extension added on there. So if you want to remove it, you'll have to enable that. For most modern versions of Windows, if you open a File Explorer, you'll see a View tab here. Click on the View tab, and you'll see a box that says File Name Extensions. Make sure this is enabled. If you're running Windows 7 or you don't see this, just type in Folder Options into the search bar, and a box should come up. This may be different from Windows versions. If you click here, go to View, and if you scroll down here, it'll say Hide Extensions for Known File Types. Make sure this is unchecked, and you'll be able to see file extensions. Right, hopefully this helps. This one is for a feature that I didn't know about, and it's very handy to use, Updated File Browser to 2.26. This was added by user admonic and xk9274. Update file browser to 2.26 to fix CSS issue. So if you take a look at the problem here, we can see that after using the file browser, there is like a dark overlay that remains on top of it. If you don't know what a file browser is, it's a very handy feature where you can transfer files to your Miui Mini Plus using Wi-Fi. So if you take a look here, you want to make sure that Wi-Fi is on first of all. We're going to go into the Tweaks app once again. We're going to go under Network. I'm going to make sure that HTTP web-based file sync is turned on. This will let you transfer files just using a web browser. I do have to note here, for security reasons, you probably don't want to use this feature on public Wi-Fi because it's unencrypted and anyone can access your Miui Mini. To do this, all we need is the Wi-Fi address of your Miui Mini Plus. As you can see here, mine is 192.168.0.101. Alright, real quick, I'm going to have to put my Miui next to my router so I can show this next step. Alright, so what we're going to do is we're going to open up a browser tab and then type in the IP address of your Miui Mini Plus. Mine was 192.168.0.101. Yours may differ. And here we have a very handy dandy visual interface to interact with the storage of the Miui Mini Plus, and we can use it to transfer files. So if you want to transfer over emulators, or if you want to transfer over games, this is a very handy feature. I do have to note here, for my home Wi-Fi network, it's not strong enough to use away from the router, so I do have to have my device pretty close to the router, meaning this isn't as convenient as it could be. I might just get a new router. Alright, so I'll show you a use case. Let's say you're watching Digimon, and you wanted to transfer over a new episode. As we can see here, we have episode 2, and you're like, I want episode 3. Just simply take the file, and just drag and drop, and here we have the file transferring over. This is such a handy way to transfer files to your Miui Mini. Alright, as you can see, the file finished transferring, so why don't I grab my Miui Mini Plus and show you guys the file on the device itself. Alright, so if we take a look here, we're going to go into the Video Player app, which you do have to install through Package Manager, and as we can see, we have Digimon Episode 3. We could start it up, and it's playing. My goodness, I have fond memories of this show. Honestly, I enjoyed it way more than Pokemon. Our next two are going to be very quick, but they're also very handy features to have. We have the Profile-Specific Themes, Favorites, and Recent List, added by Sikrotef. themes, favorites, and recent lists are now associated to the current profile only. This was already the case for save files. It allows you to have your own configuration between your main profile and the guest profile. So what this means is that you can have your own themes, your own favorites, and your own recent lists between your main profile and the guest one. And this comes in handy if you're sharing the device or if you bought the device for your kids and you can only afford one and they have to share. This is a very handy feature to have. Now, I know back in my day, my parents were working very hard and they were very poor. And so when they bought us a Game Boy Color, we only had one. So we had to share between me and my brother. Those are good times. Okay, if you want to enable guest mode, we're going to have to go back into the package manager and under apps, you'll see guest mode. So just turn it on, hit start twice, and it'll install it. Now if you go into the apps, once again, you'll see guest mode right here. So you can turn it on or off, and then it'll be on the guest mode profile, and it'll have its own settings. This is handy if you want to show the device to someone else and don't want them to mess up your things, or if handing to a kid. It's a very handy feature to have. Okay, for this one is startup and checkoff scripts by Dragoon Doris, an easy way to run scripts at Onion Startup and just before powering off. I tried fiddling around with this, but I couldn't get it to work. So if we take a look here at your SD card for your Miu Mini Plus or your Miu Mini, you go to the .temp_update folder, and you can put it in the startup folder here or in the checkoff. And what you use is a text file with a .sh extension, which is for a bash script. And if you just look, it's just running commands in the terminal. And I'll show you where it is in the source file. So if you look at the runtime.sh file here, we can see it's making the directory if it doesn't exist. And then it will look to see how many scripts are in the startup directory, and then it will run those scripts. We'll just go through and run each of them. I don't know what you can do. I try making an image pop up or playing a music file. I'm not very familiar with Linux, so I'm not entirely sure what commands I can use, but I did manage to make it take longer. I used sleep, and I think that made it boot up longer. I was trying to print hello world, echo, whatever. None of that worked, so I have to fiddle around and see what I can do. But for the more tech-savvy people, you can run scripts at startup and before shutting down. Okay, now we have new emulators and cores, and this one is the most exciting. We have Nintendo DS on Onion OS now, so you can play your DS games. They work fairly well. This was added by Stuart Fu. It was integrated by Sikrotef and Schmertzim. And before we begin, so you install it through Package Manager, but let me show you some things you can do. So when you go into the MU folder, NDS, go to Resources, and then Settings.json, we're going to go into the max CPU setting and change this to 1800 if you have a Miu Mini Plus. If you have one of the original Miu Minis, leave it at 1600. So this will let us overclock up to 1800. Now, if you want, you can try pushing it to 1900, even 1950, but in my experience, 1800 was the sweet spot. For the original Miu Mini, you don't want to go above 1600. You can try pushing it to 1700 and see how well it fares, but it may be a little bit unstable. Also, Schmertzim did some testing on the voltages, and you will not end up using a lot more power by overclocking. It's very negligible. So this is something I would change right away. And if you want to put in games, it will make an NDS folder right here, and you can just drag and drop your zip files. Now, if you're wondering what kind of ROMs to get, no intro basically means that it was a verified dump, and you want to get decrypted for emulation. Encrypted is when you're putting it on a flash card and playing it on the original hardware, as far as I know. You can find these somewhere. I can't legally say where. Well, let's just assume you're making, legal dumps of games you own. Alright, I'll show you guys how to do it on the handle now. We're going to start with installation. We're going to use the package manager as always. You're going to start off in the verify tab, and you're just going to scroll down to Nintendo DS. And as we can see, it is drastic. We're going to turn it on and you hit start twice. And that will install the emulator. And it'll create the ROMs directory as well. So after this, you can turn it off and then copy over any ROMs that you want. And I would highly suggest making that overclock change. All right, one other thing. So let's say you copied over your ROMs and you don't see it. If you press select or hold the menu button, you see this option, refresh all ROMs. And then this will let you see all your games that you added if they aren't showing up. I will also give another short troubleshooting tip. The save state, the quick save state for when you power off is a little buggy, especially for Pokemon games. So I highly recommend saving in-game as well as creating multiple save states. But one thing that can happen is when you're playing Pokemon, let's say, and then you use the option to power off and save, and then you turn it on and it boots to a white screen, that means your save state got corrupted. So that's an easy fix for this. When you are turning it on, immediately hold the menu button and it'll boot to the main menu instead of the emulator and the last save state. Now, unfortunately, that save state is gone, so you're going to have to go in and delete that. But if you have multiple save states, it should be okay. So just noting that here because I've seen that issue pop up for a lot of people. Okay, now that we're in the game, let me go over the general features and the hotkeys. So referring back to the overclock setting, if you hold menu and start, you'll get into this advanced menu. And here we can change our clock speed and increase it to 1800. There's other things you can change here as well, but I wouldn't recommend messing with it unless you really want to. And this will help with some performance issues you might be having. Most DS games run pretty okay. Pokemon, you're going to get some general slowdowns. There might be a little bit of frame skipping going on. You can tell with the audio. Menu and select will bring up the drastic menu. And we have a lot of options. I would recommend leaving frame skip type to automatic, and you can change this to 1 if you want and mess around with it. But there are a lot of options here. I leave everything to default. Now these will make the graphics look better, but I don't think the Miu can handle that. Editor Ducky here. The two options I was talking about was high resolution 3D and threaded 3D. So the Miu isn't really powerful enough to take advantage of those features. But if you are emulating the DS on more powerful hardware, you can try turning those settings on to make those 3D games look a little bit more crisp. You can change the controls. There's a lot of options here. Okay, now the main thing is you can change the layout of the screens by holding menu and then pressing left or right. So there's a couple that I would recommend toying around with and seeing what you like. This one is nice because it has the full screen, and then the second screen is overlaid as a transparent or translucent display overlay right here. And you can switch between the two screens by pressing R2. Now, I like this or the other one where it shows both screens because I don't like switching back and forth unless there's minimal switching. But it's up to your personal preference. Another version that people like is just a full screen right here and then pressing R2 to switch. L2 will bring up the stylus and pressing A will simulate a stylus press. You can hold A to simulate holding or writing with the stylus. Now, I gotta say, the stylus usability is not very good. It's a D-pad, you can't really simulate someone writing or drawing with it. So for a lot of games where you have to use a lot of stylus, like Trauma Center, it would be almost next to impossible to play those games. I don't recommend trying it, although if you want to, I will give you props. If anyone can beat Trauma Center using the simulated stylus with the D-pad. If you can't, you deserve some sort of award. The other layout versions I kind of like is the one like this. So if that screen's a little bit tiny, you can do it like this. Editor Ducky here. So the screen layout I'm describing is the main screen is in the upper left-hand corner with the original DS resolution. And then we have a tiny screen on the lower right-hand corner and it's very small. So you can see both screens at the same time and one screen is slightly larger than the other. This has advantages in that you see both screens unobstructed. For the previous layout versions where you see the full screen image of one screen and then have the other one on top, even though it's translucent, it does block that upper right hand corner. The other disadvantage of just having a full screen image is that you need to constantly switch back and forth between the two screens, and that may annoy a few people. My eyesight isn't too bad, but this is like pushing it, guys. Like, this is very tiny. So like full screen or with the overlay is, I think, the way to go. But having both like this, where you can see both screens uninterrupted, is pretty nice. Fast forwarding is the same. It's menu and R1. And this will help you grind your Pokemon battles. So if we take a look here, the reason why I like Pokemon is they have an indicator showing you when you can input something on the touchscreen. So you can press R2 to switch. Sorry, I'm slurring my words. But you can just tap A to fight, and then it will select your first move. So as long as your first move is something that you want to use, you don't have to look at the screen. And it will help you grind a lot faster. Hold menu and press R to turn off fast forwarding. And there's one note here. I know someone wanted the audio for fast forwarding. I don't know how to enable the audio. It seems to be turned off by default. And, you know, it depends on the person, but having the option will be good, I guess. It sounds kind of screechy to me, so I don't care if it's on or off. But I looked into it. I couldn't find out how to do it. I'll look into it a little bit more. Okay, save states and load states are the same. Menu and R2, or menu and L2. R2 will quick save, and then L2 will load. So if I move over here and I press menu and L2, it'll load that state. You activate a game switcher by accident. Or actually exited by accident. Now, people have noted that they don't really like this as a game switcher or the save and exit. You can turn off that functionality. I forgot where exactly, but if that's annoying you, you know, you're mispressing it, you can't turn it off. Okay, Editor Ducky here. I went back and found where to disable the menu button, being Game Switcher. So if you go into the Tweaks app and then go to Button Shortcuts, you'll see the option In-Game Menu Button. Press A on it, and you'll see the options for Single Press, Long Press, and Double Press. You can have it take a different action, or you can just turn it off completely. You can do it separately for In-Game and in the main menu. So there were some few cases where I did press the menu button and it went to game switcher or it exited. It was a little bit annoying, but I like having the game switcher and the hotkeys available. Completely up to you. I personally don't use the game switcher a lot, so you can disable it. I do like the hotkeys though, and you don't need game switcher to use the hotkeys. Okay, so menu and A will switch between the last display and the current one. So if you want to switch between the two, you can use that hotkey. Menu and B will switch between blur and pixel. It's a little bit hard to tell, but this looks a little bit more smudgy. I kind of like the pixel look. And then if you take a look here, menu and Y will switch between the background images. There's quite a few here. I'm kind of partial to the white one myself because I had a white DSi, or DS Lite, sorry. That was the first DS I had. Okay, there's a few more hotkeys to go over. So if you press L2 and the stylus is over there, you can actually bring it up or down by holding menu and then down or up. With the stylus on, you can switch which screen is going on. You can also change the pen image. Let me make the screen a little bit larger. And then hold menu and Y, and you can change it. As for the performance or general play experience, it's actually pretty good. It's playable, but it's not ideal. So I would prefer to have an actual DS or a handheld with a larger screen so that I can see both screens comfortably. I would like a touchscreen as well to simulate the stylus for some games. So if we take a look at a game like Phoenix Wright Ace Attorney, you know what? It works fairly well. You don't really need stylus input. You can do everything with the D-pad. You do need to access the touchscreen, but you can have it up as an overlay or in the lower right-hand corner. And most of the time, you're on this main screen. So for games like this, it's pretty good. There's a lot of games that only use primarily one screen. And if they use the touchscreen, it's for basic menu things. So someone did curate a list of Nintendo DS games for the Miu Mini. So if you Google that, you should be able to find some. And moving on, we have the Pico 8 Wrapper, which is a new standalone emulator added by XK9274. An awesome port of the official Pico 8 engine. It offers an optimal compatibility and a native Pico 8 online store called Splore. In order to use the wrapper, you need to have previously purchased Pico 8. I'm going to show you how to install it real quick. I do not own Pico 8, so I cannot use it, but we'll go back into the apps and go into the package manager. We're going to go into expert. Let's scroll all the way down until we find Pico. Here it is. You want the Pico 8 standalone. It's already installed, but this will just install the shortcut in the apps directory, the expert apps directory. Fake 8 is the RetroArch one. Okay, so if we go into the experts tab, you have to install the shortcut, by the way, through the package manager. We will see Pico 8 standalone, and you can just start it. Now, I don't have the files there, but you do have to purchase it and then copy the files over to that directory, rapp pico 8. Then rapp is for the expert apps directory. All right, I'll go into the documentation and just go over the controls just a little bit. The ROM folder will be Pico, and then it will accept .p8 or .png files. You will have to copy the pico8_din or pico8.dat files into the rapp pico 8 bin directory. So make sure it's rapp and not just apps. I have some notes here. If you choose exit to console on the Explorer menu, you'll be stuck there. You can hit select and menu to exit Explorer and then re-enter it. X will bring up the Explorer menu and start will bring up the game options. The rest of the hotkeys are over here. But if you are unfamiliar with Pico 8, it's essentially a fake virtual console with limitations, and people make games for it, and the limitations drive the creativity. So the resolution is limited, I think the colors you can use are limited, and there's some pretty neat games out there for Pico 8, and it's just a growing scene, so if that's something you want to check out, I highly recommend it. I think it's pretty cool to get into game dev on Pico 8, because it's easy enough where it won't overwhelm you, and your scope will be limited because of the limitations. Another recommendation is if you wanted to make a Game Boy Color game, you can use GB Studio and kind of reverse engineer games you like, because all the sprite sheets are out there, and you can try to replicate the game in GB Studio and then work from there and then make your own game. I forgot to mention here, but the main reason you want to use a standalone app is that it has way better compatibility. It's not an emulator, it's the actual app. So for the Fake Away Core and RetroArch, you have all of the features like rewinding, fast forward, save states, all of that, but you might have a lower compatibility. Whereas with the standalone app, you should have full compatibility and might be able to play games that wouldn't run on a Fake Away. So those are the two trade-offs. The only downside is you have to go buy it. I think it's like $14. Yeah, it might be a little bit too high for some people, but you know, just letting you guys know. Okay, this one is neat if you like Neo Geo. We have the GN Geo new standalone emulator added by BankBank and Schmertzim. GN Geo is a Neo Geo MVS and Neo Geo AES standalone emulator. It supports GNO files and has the particularity of starting very quickly with great performances. So I want to take a little note here. So when you install it, you will have to install it using the package manager. And the ROMs folder will not be Neo Geo. It will be GN Geo. So let me just show you real quick in the config files. If we go into your SD card, emulator, no, it'll be rapp. Sorry, rapp is for the expert apps. We go to GN Geo and we'll look at the config file. This will be your ROMs directory. Just make sure you're putting it in there. Another thing, the documentation, this is for the RetroArch Core, I believe, but since you want to use the GNO files, I would highly recommend just Googling for Stuart Fu GNO Neo Geo files, and you'll find a repository with the files already converted for you. I try to convert it myself. It's not too hard once you get everything installed, but it might be a little bit above the level of the average user because you have to use Linux. But let me just show you the performance real quick now. All right, now I'm going to show you how to install and use the app. We're going to go into apps and package manager. We're going to need to make sure expert is enabled. This is just a shortcut, but it'll show up and then all those expert apps will be located in there. Make sure that's turned on. Go to the expert tab. We're going to scroll all the way down. going to be under S for SNK. And here it is. If there's a little cartridge icon that is installed, this will simply add the shortcut. We're going to hit start twice. Now to access it, you're going to go into the expert app. And this will show you all your expert apps. So we can go under GNGO. And then we can play some ROMs. Now I'm going to show off that some don't work. It might not be the fault of the emulator. Some are marked as incompatible. Also, it's very picky which versions that you use. We're going to go show off all of these. So if you notice, the main benefit of this emulator is that the boot times are super fast. If you use the RetroArch core, then it will take, some takes like 40 seconds maybe. I haven't played a lot of arcade games, so I don't know how to play these games. Just to show you that it works. Editor Ducky here. So the three games I had for GNGO were Art of Fighting 3, The Path of the Warrior, Fatal Fury, King of Fighters, Fatal Fury 3, Road to the Final Victory, Garo, Mark of the Wolves. I also had King of Fighters 2K, Metal Slug 3, and Aero Fighters 2. Now, I didn't get to show off all of these on the video, but I just showed that they worked. Most of these are fighting games, and I never played these. I only played like Street Fighter 4 when it came out on Steam, so I'm very bad at these games. But yeah, the main benefit is that these games perform fairly well on both RetroArch cores and the GNGO emulator. But the main benefit of the GNGO emulator is that the boot up times are incredibly fast. If you use the RetroArch core, it may take anywhere from 30 seconds to about 40 seconds or more to load the game. You're just standing there staring at the screen while the game loads. Whereas for GNGO, you start a game, it starts up almost immediately, and the performances are pretty much identical. You can save states in this emulator, but I couldn't get it to load properly. Some games will just straight up not work. Again, boot times are super fast. Okay, let me go into the RetroArch core now and show you what the performance is like over there. You can see that it's going to take a long time to even load the game. There's a clear difference here. Oh, this loaded the save state that I had. I like Metal Slug. It's pretty fun. Okay, I just want to note here, I am very unfamiliar with Neo Geo and some other consoles because I just never had those systems. But one thing I do want to note when you're playing this and this is your first time, I was playing Metal Slug and I noticed there was some slowdown, so I thought it was the emulator not working well or maybe the Miu Mini had poor hardware. And I made a video about my experiences trying to get this to work. And a nice commenter, the Ego Bizarro, mentioned that the slowdown is actually on the original games because even the Neo Geo couldn't handle that much. So I learned something new. It's a little bit hard to determine if a performance in game is like accurate or due to the emulator or the hardware or both. And since I had very little experience with Neo Geo, and a lot of these other consoles in general, I just don't know what the experience is supposed to be like. That said though, it's a lot of fun. I might check out more, but yeah, I can see why people like Neo Geo. These games are mad hard though, I gotta say. Alright, we're moving on to ScumVM. ScumVM 2.9.0 standalone, updated standalone emulator added by XK9274 and Schmerzen. This version of ScumVM 2.9.0 standalone offers awesome performances compared to the RetroArch core performances. Now, I did test out Grim Fandango, and it does work a lot better. One thing to note here, the directory for the ROMs will just be ScumVM. Alright, so I'm going to show off the installation process and then it running, and then compare it to the RetroArch core. We're going to go into the package manager. I'm going to go into experts, and then this is where you will find the ScumVM standalone app. It's going to be all the way at the bottom. Press start twice, and it will add the ScumVM standalone emulator into the expert folder, which you also have to enable in the package manager. Okay, that took a little bit longer than usual. We'll go into expert now. And here, so what I did was I copied the games over to my SD card. If you want to find the game, just Google the game name. and you can download them from most sites. Copy them over and go into import games. You can do use database name no parentheses or use directory name no parentheses. If you want the parentheses there, just use the first option. So it'll scan and then it will look for the games and then it'll import them into the emulator. I just want to note here, there is sound for all these games, but my microphone that is recording my voice can't pick up the sounds coming from the handheld itself. I have it set so that it only picks up my voice. I will make a note of when the sound is not working though. This is taking a wee bit longer than the first time I did this. Okay, Editor Ducky here, so I'd like to go over a few things. From what I understand, the files that you want are the files once the game has been installed on your computer traditionally. So if you look for these games, usually what you download are the game files. You copy that entire directory over, and then once you import them into ScumVM, you can run it. The first time you run the game, there'll be a pretty lengthy verification process. It's verifying that all the files are there and that they are working. This could take a pretty long time here, so I'm speaking like a minute here, maybe more, maybe a little bit less, but you only have to do it once per game. In the process of making this video, I did have to remove the SD card and copy over files and check things multiple times while shooting, while editing. And one time I did pull it out while the device was on, so I was a little worried I might have corrupted my card, but thankfully everything seems to be fine. So it kind of has the old school tank controls where you press left or right to change your direction and then forward will always go forward. And here the performance is actually pretty darn good. It's very hard for me to control because I am playing with the microphone in my face. So I cannot see what I'm doing half the time. Okay, so when I exit. Oh yeah, it does crash when you press the menu button. I should have right hit start. Escape from Monkey Island doesn't seem to run that well. I don't know if I got the wrong game or I did something wrong here. Let's quit out and then load into the RetroArch core and I'll show you the performance difference there. To do that, we're going to go into the games section and then load up ScumVM here. We're going to do the same thing. We're going to import the games. It didn't detect Escape from Monkey Island. Yeah, let's load up Grim Fandango first so we can compare the two. Obviously, the experience isn't perfect on the Miu Mini Plus, but it is playable. You're not going to be able to tell by the video alone, but if you could hear what I'm hearing, you can tell right away that the sound is chugging on the RetroArch core. There's a lot of skipping going on. Also, another weird thing, the controls are not bound and it doesn't register the D-pad, so I'll probably have to do some digging into RetroArch and trying to get the keys to be bound properly, but it would not work, so I can't really move here. But you can tell just from the intro alone that it's not going to run well. Okay, now we're going to quit out of this, and then we're going to go on to Escape from Monkey Island. That game won't even start on the RetroArch core. There's a lot of audio skipping right away, and then it just crashes. Doesn't even work. So I gotta say, I didn't test a lot of games, just those two, and I didn't test the games thoroughly, so I can't report back as to what the entire play experience is gonna be like. But from what little I did see, the standalone ScumVM emulator does a great job. And you could probably play a lot of games and it'll have it run pretty well on that emulator. Obviously, it's not going to be the ideal experience, but you should be able to beat some games. Our next one's a little bit more niche. We have the Duck Station Extreme Amped by KMFD. It's a new core added by Schmertzim. Duck Station is slower than PCSX, however, it allows to run some games like Fromage. Could be interesting on rhythm games too. So I'm going to show it off and I'm going to run Fromage. I'm going to show it off with the regular core first and then load it with the new core. So we're going to go into RetroArch to do this. I'm going to load content and we're going to navigate to your ROMs directory. I put it in the PS folder because that's where all my PlayStation ROMs are. There's your mods right there. And then we're going to use the default core TCSX Rearmed. And it will not run. Okay, I am going to just exit out of this. Okay, now let me show it off with the new DuckStation Extreme Amped core. Now this will take a while to load. It takes a while to load and it takes a little bit longer than usual to quit, but I'm just showing the entire process in real time so you can know what to expect. Essentially, kind of like a basic Minecraft. Do some building if you want. Not the most ideal way to play this game, but it does run. Now, I gotta say here, I did test the emulation performance of the new core on regular PlayStation 1 games, and it does chug. TCSX is just faster and works better on this handheld. I didn't really do a lot of testing with overclocking and tweaking the settings, so the emulator might be able to perform a little bit more accurately. But for now, I prefer to use TCSX because it just works. You can do cool stuff like this. For this next one, I couldn't really get it to work, but maybe you guys can. It's a fan-made multiplayer Super Mario Bros. So Super Bros. War and Super Cat Wars core. It's a new core added by Schmertzim. If we take a look at the instructions here, the ROM folder is going to be Super Bros. War and the extension is going to be .game. There's no BIOS. And you have to download the files and then unzip it and then put it into a folder called .data within the Super Bros. War folder. And then that's going to be the game files. And you're going to create an empty text file called Super Mario War.game in the ROMs folder for Super Bros. War. And that'll be the shortcut for where the data is located. So this is the folder structure right here. Editor Ducky here. This is going to be the folder structure. You're going to have a folder called Super Bros. War with no spaces and all uppercase in the ROMs directory. Within that folder, you're going to have two files. Super Cat Wars Lite.game and Super Mario War.game. And you're going to have a folder called .data. In the .data folder, there's going to be your Super Cat Wars Lite directory and then your Super Mario War directory with all the game files in those folders. Now you have to match the name of those .game files exactly the same as the name of the directories containing the game files in the .data folder. That .game file is just simply telling the operating system to look for that directory in the .data folder. Now I will load it up and show you guys. It does not run for me. I'm going to RetroArch. I'll load content and navigate to the ROMs directory. The ROMs and then Super Bros. War. And then we'll try both of these. You get a fatal error. We'll try the other file. It's been a while, so I've been working on this video for a long time, so I'm getting a little scatterbrained right now. And we have another error. So I couldn't get this to work. Not entirely sure what I'm doing wrong here, but maybe someone else can figure it out. This next item is very similar to Pico 8. I never knew there are so many of these, but it's Low Res NX. It's a new core. It was added by Schmertzim, a great 2D game engine with many free games available. So if we take a look at the documentation, the ROMs folder will be called Low Res NX. It'll accept NX, ZIP, or 7-ZIP files. There'll be no BIOS, and you can download the games from their website here. So I downloaded two. I downloaded Chippy, and I downloaded the Peggle clone, and why don't we go check it out? Okay, so we're going to load up those games. We're going to go into RetroArch again. Going to go into load content. We're going to navigate to that directory. It's going to be under ROMs and then Low Res NX. And then here it boots. This game is very simple, but I like it. You just go around to collect the chips. You hold B to jump over the forklift. I failed there. It gets very hard later on because you have to move so fast. Nice. Perfect score. Editor Ducky here. So what the game is like is you control a tiny character and there are potato chips falling from the ceiling for some reason. And there's a little arrow indicator where it's coming down from. So you have to go around and collect all the chips and there's going to be a forklift going from left to right at set intervals and you have to jump over that otherwise you'll die. Your goal is to collect a certain number of chips before the level is done. I actually had a lot of fun with this game. Pretty simple, but you can get a few minutes of enjoyment out of it and then put it down and then come back to it if you want to. It's a very nice little time killer. Alright, let's exit out of that. We'll load the other game. This one, I don't really like as much. I do remember playing Peggle, though. I remember when it first came out, it was kind of huge because it was like the perfect casual game. Not quite the same if you can't hear the sound. I might try to get the audio from my phone and include it in the video, but the phone audio won't be very good. That was a fail. Alright, I think you get the idea here, fellas. It's pretty neat to see all these different platforms for people to make these small bite-sized games. It's not going to be for everyone, but I think it's really cool if you want to tinker around with the game for a few seconds or for a few minutes and then get into game dev yourself. I think this is the biggest gateway into making your own games. Alright, this is a similar update. This is a new core for retro puzzle games. It's PuzzleScript, added by Schmertzim. A great core to run many retro puzzle games, many puzzles available from the PuzzleScript community. So if we take a look at the documentation here, the ROMs folder will be called Puzzle. It will be a .pz file for the ROMs, and there's no BIOS, and you can get the games from the PuzzleScript website. Now, if you look at the link here, it tells you how to turn the games into .pz files. Basically, just click on hack or source code when you go to a game and copy that and put it into a text file and then rename it with the extension .pz. So for example, if you were to click on this game, there's a hack this game link right here, and you click on it and you can see the source code right here. And so you're supposed to copy this and paste it into a .pz file. I tried multiple ways with multiple games and I just could not get them to run properly. So I'm not quite sure what I'm doing wrong here, as there aren't many steps in this process and there's not a lot you can do to mess this up. So I might be making a very elementary mistake, but yeah, just letting you guys know, I couldn't get this to work. Alright, for these next few systems, I have no idea how they run. I never even seen them in real life, and so I was fumbling around with them, but the games are a little confusing to figure out. Why don't we start with PUAE Extreme Amped, which is a new core. It was added by Schmertzim. A new alternative PUAE core made by KMFD. This Commodore core is available in the Expert section of Package Manager. Let's take a look at the documentation. This is for the Amiga and Amiga CD32. The ROMs folder will be Amiga. These are the accepted extensions, and you need these BIOS files. You should add all of them, the documentation notes. Okay, you know the drill by now. We're going to go into Apps and Package Manager and go into Expert and enable it. I believe the core is already installed and I can just run it from RetroArch, but here we have the new core, so that disk icon means that it is indeed installed. I believe this will just add the shortcut into the Expert directory or app. Hit start twice. We'll go into Expert and there it is. I downloaded an entire ROM set for the Amiga beforehand. But this may take a while because there are a lot of games I added. Yeah, 3,000. I was playing Ultima 4 and I couldn't figure out how to get past the insert disk icon, or the prompt I mean, so I'll just load it up real quick. R1 to simulate mouse input. Yeah, I couldn't figure this out. It runs pretty well. Select is keyboard input, I believe. Okay, so as far as I can tell, the game seemed to be running well enough. I can't tell what is good or bad performance for this, and it's a little confusing to play because there's different input methods for each game. So I don't know if there's an advantage with this core over the existing one, but for any fans of the Amiga and Amiga CD, I think you can check it out and see how it works. This is another system, the Amstrad CPC. We have the Caprice 32, which is a new core added by Schmertzim. Caprice 32 is a core for Amstrad CPC. Note that it offers better performance and compatibility than CrowCod's core, available in the Expert section of the Package Manager. Okay, we'll go over how to install it again. Once again, I believe the core is already available. You just have to have a shortcut to it. You can launch directly to it from RetroArch. Go over to Experts. There it is, Caprice 32. That icon shows that it's already installed, but we will add the shortcut to Expert. All right, now let's go into the Expert app. I also downloaded a ROM set for the system as well, and there's a lot of games. All right, I could not figure out how to get some games to run. Man, a lot of games don't run, so I had to go look for a game that would run. Editor Ducky here. So I forgot the name of the game, and I can't find it because I loaded every single game I could until one started working, and this was the one that worked. You play as an attack helicopter, and it's one of those vertical shoot-em-up types where you're going and you're shooting enemies as they come on screen and you're avoiding obstacles. It was very rudimentary, but you'd have to remember that some of these older computer-based consoles were very old and that video games were relatively new at the time in terms of providing gaming for a home environment. Now you have to remember here that these systems were basically tiny computers. And they were very hard to use and figure out because they have a lot of different forms of input in terms of controlling the games as well as installing the games themselves. You had floppy disks, some had cassette tapes, some had cartridges, some had keyboards, joysticks, mice, trackballs, whatever. There's a lot of different doodads and doohickeys, and it was very hard to figure out how to get the games to run. It's mostly due to my inexperience because I've never seen these consoles in my life ever. So I'll have to go back and do a lot of research and actually just tinker around with the emulators. And if I'm lucky enough, get my hands on the actual hardware itself. I don't even know what the controls are, but the game is running. I am mashing all the buttons. Start and select bring up the keyboard, so you can shoot bullets now. I thought I would be flying over the building, but I crashed into it. It's difficult because I don't have knowledge and experience with these systems, so I don't know the input method. It's these weird computer systems with like a keyboard, joystick, mouse, or weird doodad, and like I'm just used to having one controller input, and I know how a controller works. These systems were before my time. Not only that, they weren't available where I live, so I've never seen these systems, and I don't know how it's supposed to feel when you play these games. And there's also like no compatibility sheet, so I don't know which ROMs work, which don't. And I'm not entirely sure if the ROM is working properly in the first place. But just like going back to the Neo Geo, I thought the emulator was slowing down or the hardware was not powerful enough. But that's just how the actual hardware works with the games. Yeah, for this it was a little bit hard to figure out. It would take me a lot more time to go through every game and figure out like what the correct way to input or control the game is and then figure out how it should feel. And I would have to put in hundreds of hours just to test the emulator and the ROMs to see if it's functioning well. So yeah, I just briefly breezed through this. But if you're a fan of the CPC, you can check this core out and see if it offers better performance. All right, so this one is very simple. It's just Pong. We got the Gong Pong, which is a new core added by Schmerzim. Gong is a port of Pong game to Live Retro. This core is included in port section of Onion and doesn't require any BIOS or additional ROM to work. All right, so let's go into RetroArch. Gonna load the Gong Pong core, and it's just Pong. You can beat the computer easily by holding B and then making the ball go really fast. Nope. Sometimes I'm moving too fast, you know. Gotta go fast like Sonic. Too easy, man. Too easy for Arteezy. What is this? Right, I think that gives you an idea what this is like. This is kind of like a neat time killer. If you got like a few seconds or a few minutes, you're sitting on the porcelain throne and you want to kill some time, you can play good old Pong. Yeah, our next one is a Commodore 64 related core. We have Frodo, and it was added by Schmerzim. Now, if you read the documentation, the ROMs will be in the Commodore folder, and we have a lot of extensions. I think these are like disc or tape or cartridge file formats. But yeah, one note here, it's kind of tough to get these games working with Frodo. There's a long list of games and a lot of ROM sets, and a lot of them were CRT. And CRT games are not compatible with Frodo. So I found a few D64 games, and they wouldn't really load well on Frodo. But on the other hand, the Vice 64 core seems to work a lot better. So just throwing that out there, if you play a lot of Commodore 64, it was not ideal for me because I was playing Ghostbusters, and the fact that you have to interact with a keyboard, you have to bring that up and then pick the keys that you want to type. And yeah, that was not an ideal experience on the Miu Mini, but for some it might be okay. Again, this is going to take a lot of time to test everything out. And at first glance, it doesn't seem like it's very user-friendly in terms of everything just working out of the box. All right, this next one is Beetle PCE. This is a new core added by Schmerzen for the TurboGrafx-16. Beetle PCE is a PC Engine core slower than Beetle PCE Fast, but more accurate. Let's take a look at the documentation. Here, the ROMs folder will be PCE. And PCE, CHD, ZIP, 7Z, CCD, ISO, image, and bin and queue files will be accepted. So basically most CD-ROM form factors. Alright, so I've noticed that this core does give me a little bit of problems. So I'm going to load the game that I really like using that core. We'll go into our ROMs directory and PCE. I've been playing a little bit of Aero Blasters. Kind of hard. I find it difficult because you can't really move that quickly. I'm not sure if that's accurate to the original system, or I have to tweak the sensitivity a little bit. So here is the non-fast PCE, and you can't load that game. So we're going to try it on the fast core. And here it works. So this game is pretty fun. Editor Ducky here. So the game I was playing, Aero Blasters Birdie TurboGrafx-16, it's essentially a game like R-Type. You're controlling an airplane, there are a bunch of enemies on the screen, you're going from left to right, and you're just shooting as much as you can. I thought the game was a lot of fun, but the one problem I had was there were some levels where you have to avoid narrow gaps, and I feel like you couldn't move fast enough. Now, I don't know if it's a case of getting good, or if the controller D-pad sensitivity was a little bit too low. I'm going to have to go back and check it out. I would love to get my hands on an actual TurboGrafx-16 and get a copy of that game and then play it on a CRT and see how it feels. But yeah, if you're looking for a game, highly recommend checking out Aero Blasters. It's pretty fun, but it is pretty difficult. When you die, you lose all your power-ups, and it's really hard to come back. It's a little quirk of being transparent when you die. Yeah, it's kind of a recurring theme with these cores where it's like, I'm not entirely sure if I'm doing something wrong here or if they're just experimental and kind of unstable. I don't have a lot of experience using these older systems that are basically mini computers, and I'm not entirely sure what the ideal experience is for playing these games on these systems. That said, it's kind of difficult to get some things working because it's so confusing. There's so many file types, there's so many input methods, and I'm not sure exactly how you start a game sometimes. I did notice like for some systems it's just supposed to start, but it doesn't. So I think it's like an emulation problem there. But yeah, when I look at these newer cores for these systems, I feel like the standard RetroArch cores or the faster cores just seem to work better, and they're more reliable for the average person who doesn't want to do a lot of heavy tinkering. I'm going to combine these next two together. They're all related to fixes. Schmerzen fixed the Vice X64 loading time, and if it was taking too long, the fix could help, and that using CRT files is also recommended. Now, I tested it out myself, and the Vice 64 emulator does seem to work a lot better with CRT files than using Frodo. For this next one, Krokos DS had some issues, so they fixed a keyboard issue, and they changed the internal config path to BIOS instead of the RetroArch folder, so they have links to the issues here. There's some fortunate bug where QWERTY keyboards are mapped to AZERTY, so they fixed that. And then this is the effects they have here. This next one is neat because in one game, we have an update to the Chai Love Core. And this was inspired by the Love Engine. The update is supposed to improve game compatibility. Let's take a look at the documentation. The ROM folder will be Chai. The extension will be Chai Love. And there are no BIOS files. So there is some games here. And there's a Flappy Bird. That's right, it's a Flappy Bird clone. Alright, so I downloaded the Flappy Bird game ahead of time. We're going to go into RetroArch and start up that game. Again, your ROM directory is going to be under Chai. This is actually a lot of fun. Man, this game is super addictive though. Once again, I think it's pretty neat that there's all these different game engines and like retro games, very limited games to kind of shift the focus to creativity and also to lower the barrier to entry to game development. Because if you're starting with like Unreal Engine and you know, the sky's the limit, you're going to always overscope your game when you're coming in as a fresh game dev. You want to limit your scope as much as possible because you have to take baby steps. Now, if you're insane, and you're going to spend a decade of your life making one game, there are people like that. So you can totally do that, but most people will not be able to handle that. So I think starting small is great. All right, we're finally nearing the end, fellas. We have an update to the Lutra core. It's made by Schmerzim, and this one fixes the compatibility with Tetris. If we take a look at the documentation, the ROMs folder will be Lutro. The extensions will be NX, ZIP, and 7-Zip. And there are no BIOS files. And they give you a link to a list of games that are compatible. I downloaded the Bubble Bobble clone and I'll show it off real quick. We're going to go into RetroArch again and just load it up from there because I like doing that. Now, one thing I want to note, I'm not entirely sure if this is the fault of the emulator, but it does sound a little weird, like a little scuffed. Once again, I never knew there are so many different game engines, but yeah, it's pretty neat. Okay, final stretch. We have fixes and minor improvements. The main UI SIG handler was fixed by T-Gecko. The network check was fixed by CodeUdan. The no screenshot images after back from first image was fixed by CodeUdan. OTA format release date and size info of new version zip was fixed by CodeUdan. Low battery warning overlapping with other battery icons fixed by Smertsum. And then fixed lockups entering apps or games by XK9274. Now we have updated or added languages. We have Hungarian added by Jolo Shinag. We have Norwegian added by Kasper Losa and Jakob. We have Romanian added by R. Karuzu. I am butchering those names and I apologize. We have Korean added by Ding Hoya. Portuguese added by Blue Core. We have French added by Schmerzen. And we have Spanish added by S. Vera. You know, I can't say this enough, but a huge thank you to the Onion OS team for making such a great product. And a huge thank you to the Handle community. I learned a lot and I got a lot of resources from the subreddits, from all the YouTubers, from all the articles I read. Thank you very much. This hobby is so fun. And it's a lot more accessible thanks to everyone sharing everything so freely. Man, this video took forever to make. My hair still looks like Guile, but it is what it is. I try my best. Unfortunately, there will still be mistakes. And as I edit the video and after I edit the video and release it and I look through it, if there's any corrections I need to make, I'll post it in the comments. As well as I need to go back and kind of get more well acquainted with the older systems like the Amiga, the CPC, the TurboGrafx-16. I have like zero experience with that compared to the OG Nintendo systems, Sony. I realized that when I was going into even arcade games that I just didn't know enough and I don't have any experience with the original hardware and software to know like what is good or what feels good for these systems. Man, yeah, it's kind of rough, but I just touched the tip of the iceberg when it comes to video games and preservation and just understanding how emulators work as well and what people want to see out of, you know, these old games being preserved. All right, that's going to be it. I apologize for this long, messy format. I wish I had all the time in the world to make a really tight and edited video with a nice script. But this is a bit more casual and more freeform, but I try my best to cover everything in the update. If I miss anything or if you guys have any questions, please feel free to let me know and I'll try to answer you as fast as I can. I read every comment. Doesn't mean I'll respond to every comment if it doesn't need a response, but I'll definitely try my best. I'm going to link all the sources as well so you can go look at the changelog yourself. And if I use anything, I should have a link there unless I forgot. All right, thank you so much for dropping by and watching. I really do appreciate it. Thank you to everyone dropping by. It means a lot to me. Anyways, as always, hope you guys are staying safe and sane out there, and catch you guys next time. Okay, Editor Ducky here with one final note. This video took a very long time to make, and I recorded over multiple days, and since I was talking so much, I was actually losing my voice. So as you listen to the audio, you'll notice that sometimes my voice is a little different, sometimes the volume is a little bit different, and I try my best to adjust for it, but the reality was I was losing my voice. Okay, that has been episode 51 of The Ducky O'Brien Show. Thank you so much for dropping by and listening. I really do appreciate it. If you would like to contact me for any reason, you can email me at duckyobrienshow@gmail.com. The email is duckyobrienshow@gmail.com. Once again, the email is duckyobrienshow@gmail.com. You can also visit my blog, duckyobrien.com, and that should have links to everything I'm doing. What a great operating system. Thank you once again to the developers for making it so great. And thank you to the community members for being so open with their information and experiences and making this hobby way more accessible. As always, hope you guys are staying safe and sane out there. And catch you guys next time.